Miss Farnborough, Reel 4.
Much looked up to, and always they were seen on certain days driving in their beautiful carriages, and sometimes there would be special parades of beautifully equipped horses and carriages bearing their mistress, their friends and relatives, all dressed in the very height of fashion.
Did you have any opportunity to observe Russian medicine before the war? Were you ever ill, or was anyone in your family ill?
No, that seems a strange thing to say, because my family was composed of 6 children, my parents and my uncle, a bachelor brother of my mother, who always lived with us, and always we had a governess in the house. So roughly speaking, we were always 10 people in the house. You can imagine our dining table. It was a very, very long one, but it took quite easily 10 people for most of the meals. My eldest sister and my elder brother were away always, chiefly at school, boarding schools. But there was always a big family group of us at home, always.
Your Russian father was a doctor. Did you know much about his work?
No, I knew little or nothing about medicine in those days. In the first place, we were a very healthy family. Like all children, we had our quota of measles, whooping cough. But I think that was all we had. I can't remember anything else. And I do know that until I went to Russia, I had never even seen a grown-up person sick in bed, nor had I ever dreamt that I would see death.
What about in Russia? Before you joined the Red Cross, was anyone in your Russian family ill?
No one was ill.
So you never saw any Russian medical practices?
No, nor did we even care, because the doctor would never talk shop. When he came home and would spend the evenings with us, when it was possible for him to do so, because even at the night he would be called out. But we never spoke about it. I think he would be rather diffident about speaking about his work, and certainly Anna Ivanovna, his wife, and the girls wouldn't want to remind him of the difficult, trying times that he had experienced.
Did you discuss politics with Asya and Nadia as part of their education or informally?
We never discussed politics. Not long ago, someone came down from London and asked me to describe in Russian the political scene, the political atmosphere in Russia before the First World War. I, of course, was dumbfounded, because I didn't know what the word politics meant in those days. You are getting a lot of my life, though, before. No one has done this. They've precipitated me straight into the war. I rather like this. It's quite something new.
Oh, good. I can understand that as a very young woman and as a foreigner, you were in no position to criticize the Russian social or political structure at that time. But the revolution, when it came, was by no means a sudden or isolated event. You must have been aware of the decades of political unrest in Russia.
I don't think I was aware of it. I don't think many people were aware of it. There could be among politicians and statesmen, there could have been that undercurrent of unrest, uncertainty, even of pessimism. But that didn't exist for us. I don't think we ever bothered. For instance, I can give you an example. I said to my foster mother, my Russian mother, Anna Ivanovna, once, that I wanted to take some money from my small account in England and put it into the Russian bank, because I felt that I wanted to live for years and years in Russia, and it would be nice to know it was there. She said, well, if you do so, you can be quite sure it will be always safe. It could never collapse unless the empire collapsed.
How was the Tsar spoken of among the people you knew?
The Tsar was greatly revered. Not only the Tsar, but the whole of the imperial family. You mustn't forget that the imperial family stood for something which was very wonderful in the eyes of the Russian citizen. Whether he be well-educated, semi-educated, or completely uneducated. The Tsars occupied in the hearts of all Russian peoples a very, very high and very wonderful position. They knew that he had been chosen to govern them. They accepted him as their head, not only of the state, but of their lives. What happened to the Tsar would happen to them if anything unforetold, anything unforeseen could hurt the Tsar and his imperial family. Everyone would feel that it was a personal event, that they too themselves had been hurt.
Did you read Russian literature at that time? Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Turgenev?
Yes, I read a lot, and I'm always very glad that I took the opportunity to read then. I read a great deal of Tolstoy, which I loved very much, and I read also of... I read of Turgenev, and I've got several books of Turgenev, and I read of Gogol and Lermontov, Pushkin, the poets as well as the writers.
To what extent were their literary...
I wanted to say Dostoevsky, and the word left me. Now, how can you explain that? He's the one that has written The Brothers Karamazov and Pristuplenia Narkasanya, Crime and Punishment and all those beautiful things. Marvellous he is. And you know why he's looking like that? Because he was in an encampment, sent in exile to Siberia for a long, long time. He only kept his beautiful hands. Even his face got distorted like a peasant because he endured such hardships. But always that brilliant brain was there, and he was writing and thinking the whole time. So always he wrote. It's a wonderful face, but you can see it's hardened and it's degenerated because of hardship.
Yes.
But his hands, I've seen them in the better picture than this, are wonderful, great, strong. Yes, you can't see them very well, but you see how he's going like that. And when he isn't like that, his hands are like that. And marvellous hands. But the face, you see, he's got more like a peasant now. But the height of the forehead. I've had that for umpteen years. He died in 1822 and 1881, he died. Just a few years before I was born.
Was there anyone in your Russian family or among your Russian friends who had known those authors?
Sorry, dear.
They actually knew them?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, many of them knew them, and many of them knew that old Prince Kropotkin, and he towards the end of the war, when the Russia was suffering from civil war, he came back to Moscow, and I was very, very fortunate to see him and hear him, and I thought it was a most wonderful occasion, because he was pronounced a revolutionary in imperial times and sent abroad, refused admittance to his country. But as a revolutionary, he came back to Russia when, after the revolution of 1917, and curiously enough, though they didn't agree with him, and though the Russian Bolsheviki didn't agree with aristocrats and with titles, they accepted him.
To what extent do you think the literary Russias that were created by Dostoevsky, Lermontov, and so on, corresponded with the Russia you knew?
Oh, they were part and parcel. These writers drew their characters from the people whom they had met and whom they had known, from the people who lived among, around them. It was not unusual to hear of similar cases, but of course where the writer would have the advantage, he could describe in such graphic, marvelous literary style the whole scene, and therefore the book was made because of his great talent for writing. Many people would meet these same people and would try to describe them, but ineffectively, because they were without the talent of the writer.
Have you read post-revolutionary Russian literature?
I have read one or two, because when I went to Russia, back to Russia, after a lapse of 44 years in 1962, I bought several books. But since then, I don't know why, I haven't had very much chance for reading. My life has always been very busy, very intense, and I'm still looking forward to my retirement, when I can really say that I can claim the privileges of old age and sit back in my armchair and take up a book and enjoy it. About some of the people whom I met in Moscow, the friends of the Usov family, they were undoubtedly very cultured people. I was rather bewildered to find them so cultured, because after all, they lived in East Europe and we were the Western world. To give an example, there was one lady, a middle-aged lady, and nearly all of them spoke beautifully English, one or two a little falteringly, perhaps, because of lack of practice. But for the most part, they were charming people and longing to speak English when the opportunity offered. But this lady especially, she knew her Shakespeare by heart. And not only Shakespeare, but Byron and Tennyson and other of our English writers and poets. And very often she would begin a long Shakespearean speech, and then she would say, "Now, Florence, what's the next line? I've forgotten." And I could never supply it. And very often I felt horribly embarrassed, because they thought, having just fairly recently come from school, I should know it all at my fingertips. But they were much more learned and much more cultured than I could have ever dreamed an Eastern country could be.